I'm Mike Vardy, and this is the Productivityist Podcast. Hey, everybody. Thanks again for joining me on the podcast this week. I have a very special interview, a return guest for me in that I've interviewed him before, Todd Henry. He is the author of Louder Than Words, and I'm really, really excited to have him on the show. He's a Bengals fan. He lives in Cincinnati, so it makes sense he's one, whereas I don't, and that makes it difficult for me to explain why I am a Bengals fan. Spoiler alert. It's from 1981, and I really liked their helmets when I was that young, 7 years old. So do the math, and you'll figure out how old I am. we talk about, how to, harness that the power of your authentic voice. That's why this episode is called Voice Lessons, because Todd and I dive into that. We talk about a whole bunch of really cool things. If you want to hear the whole interview, then you head over to patreon.com/productivityist and get the entire episode as a supporter. I'll talk more about that after we chat here with Todd Henry. Just wanted to say that before this episode launches that for some reason, and I should have checked on this, and I will do it from now on, Skype kind of defaulted to the laptop mic rather than, the mic that you would normally hear me speak off of during this discussion with Todd Henry. So I apologize for the sound quality on my side of the conversation. I don't, hopefully it doesn't distract you too much from the actual content, because it's a lot of great stuff. So again, I apologize for that, and looks like I'll be checking Skype going forward to make sure that that doesn't happen. So without further ado, let's just dive into things, okay? And again, thanks for joining me. With me right now is Todd Henry. Todd is the founder of Accidental Creative and the author of several books, but his newest book is called Louder Than Words, Harness the Power of Your Authentic Voice. Todd, thanks for joining me this week.
Mike, it's great to be here. Thanks.
Now, before we dive in, I want to go a little bit off book right off the top, and you know where I'm going. I think you know where I'm going. We're coming up, as we're recording this, we're in the preseason.
Oh, here we go.
But you don't get to talk about this, I don't think, on many other shows, right?
That's true. That's a good point. We need to create a Cincinnati Bengals podcast.
There is one, actually. It's called Inside the Jungle. It's run by Nick Suberling. We were just talking about Patreon, which anyone who's listening to this publicly, the Patreon edition is going to get like more content. You're all hearing this, though. But Nick Suberling runs, it's called Inside the Jungle. It's actually a really fantastic podcast. I'm a supporter of it. You might want to check it out, because they do like a call-in show, and it's really great. But I want to find out, like, what do you think this year in terms of where they're at? Are we going to be the same old letdown like we have been every year? Do we even make the playoffs this year? Cincinnati Bengals are our team. So we'll touch on this really briefly, and then we'll move into the real, like the reason I brought you on the show.
Fantastic. I'm very hopeful this year. I am. I feel like, it's kind of like the thing where we think that success comes all at once. It doesn't. It comes in layers. And I feel like as a team, the Bengals are poised to actually begin to experience some of the fruit of the last several years of almost success. And I don't even know if you could call it almost success. I mean, here the press in Cincinnati, where I live, I mean, the Bengals just take a beating. And I'm like, are you kidding? Do you remember the 1990s when we were 0 for the world? I mean, we've made the playoffs how many years out of the last, 7 or 8 years? I mean,
it's 5 out of the last 6 years, isn't it?
5 out of the last 6 years we've made the playoffs. And yeah, we haven't won a playoff game. Yeah, we haven't gone far. But listen, we're playing for it, right? We're still playing in January, which is amazing. So, I think anybody who's complaining about that is just off their rocker. I mean, we could be rooting for any number of other teams in the NFL right now that haven't made the playoffs in years and years and years. So I'm actually really, really grateful for what the team has done. And I'm actually really hopeful that it's going to happen this year for them, that they're at least going to win a game or two in the playoffs. I don't know if we'll go all the way, but listen, Eifert looks great. I think Dalton, I think anybody who complains about Dalton is insane. I think he is, I think he's a really good quarterback, a really good solid quarterback. And yeah, I mean, he hasn't delivered in the playoffs. I understand that. He's had a couple of key choking kind of moments, but listen, he's delivered consistently. So anyway, that's my two cents.
All right. So let's talk about delivering consistently, because you've been doing that over the past few years with like
You've had a book out like what every year, basically every 18 months for the last little while, right? Would that be a fair assessment?
You know, it's been every 2 years, almost on the dot since 2011. So this is my third since 2011. So July 2011, September 2013, August 2015.
So your last book, Die Empty, was, we talked about that on, I think we ended up talking about that on, it would have been back when I was doing Mics on Mics, I think. But I want to talk a bit about your new book. I want to talk extensively, actually, about why did you decide to talk about voice in this one? Because, I mean, in Die Empty, you've talked about, you know, kind of putting it all out there and living life so that when you die, like, there's no fuel left in the tank. You've given it all you have. And then Axtell Creative, I mean, that was your opening, you know, kind of part of... I'm not going to call it a trilogy, but I mean, because I don't think it really is a trilogy. I mean, yeah. So why did you decide to write about voice at this juncture?
So the Accidental Creative, as you mentioned, was all about organizing. I mean, mm-hmm. It's primarily about how do you position yourself to deal with the pressure and the uncertainty of the create on demand world and all of these kinds of things that many of us deal with every day. Die Empty was really about, okay, great, you're organized. Now, are you actually spending yourself, your finite resources on the right things? Are you doing the right work every day? You know, doing your best work every day? And that's great too. Louder than words, really, however, takes that to the next level and says, okay, great, you're doing the right work, but is anybody going to care? Is anybody going to pay attention? You know, because the reality is that attention for your work is not a birthright. You can do great work and you can put work out there. You can spend days, weeks, months, years producing something and put it out there to a collective so what from the world. If you haven't developed a resonant, compelling voice over time, if your work isn't consonant and precise and it isn't rooted in something of substance, then people aren't going to care. And so I kind of feel like the books have built upon each other in a way, because I think that really this is kind of the final step in making your work resonate. It's cultivating and developing a voice that other people connect with.
Well, I definitely think that some things that people can resonate with that, you know, my audience in particular is decision making. You know, I mean, that's something that, right, that people have struggled with, but they also have gotten, hopefully through, you know, both of our work or even listening to my podcast or reading your past work or whatever, is that they have a chance to like, okay, I'm getting better at that. And you talk about that one of the most important things you have to do, need to do in order to develop an authentic voice is to consistently make decisions. So what do you mean by that?
So art, really the art of creating anything, is the art of making decisions in the face of uncertainty. That word decide means to cut off. It means to eliminate options. And we are in an age when people don't like to decide things. They don't like to commit because something else might come along that's better, that they like more. And this is a problem, because one of the necessities of doing work that is resonant and that connects with people and ultimately that becomes compelling is creating work that is founded upon strong and bold decisions. We have to be willing to commit to a path in order to create work that's going to connect with people, which means by the very nature of making a decision, you're going to offend some people. You know, you're going to create something that some people simply aren't going to resonate with. That's just part and parcel of making art. That's part and parcel of doing work that is noteworthy, is that you're going to offend some people. You have to have the courage to offend. One of the great stories I came across in the course of writing this book, actually the reason that I wrote this book, quite frankly, was in 2013, I got this kind of enigmatic, is that the word?
Enigmatic.
Yeah. There we go. text from a friend who said, dude, DJ Z-Trip is reading your book. And then he sent a tweet of, a copy of The Accidental Creative, like a photo of that. And, you know, this guy had said, hey, I just bought this book or whatever, and I'm checking it out for inspiration. And, you know, I'll be the first person to admit I am not thoroughly familiar with the hip hop scene or the DJ world, you know?
Who in the hell is that?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I'm, you know, sort of like, oh, okay, that's really cool. That's great. You know, really neat. I'm glad when people discover the book. And then a couple of months later, I'm watching the Grammys, and the closing number of the Grammys is, you know, they say coming up next, LL Cool J, Travis Barker, you know, I don't know if you remember when they did that, you know, Chuck D, mm-hmm. They did this sort of like closing number a couple years ago. And so I'm watching this thing. I'm like, oh, I'll watch this. I'm watching the Grammys, and, you know, LL Cool J is doing his thing, and you know, Chuck D and Travis Barker, and you know, all this stuff. It's really cool. And I look up behind them, and there's this giant banner that says Z Trip, and this guy on the turntables. And I'm like, Z Trip? That's the guy who was reading my book, you know? So I just look on Twitter and I reach out and I say, hey, you know, great job at the Grammys. Like, what do you say? You know? And I mean, I'm thinking I'm never going to hear back from this guy. Right. And within, you know, a short period of time, you know, he gets back to me and we start this interaction, and I had discovered his, you know, amazing body of work, you know, it's just brilliant body of work. And so they were going to be coming through Cincinnati. He's the kind of the touring DJ. He tours with LL Cool J, right? It's his kind of touring DJ. And so I went down to a show and we kind of hung out backstage. And so I was just kind of asking him, you know, hey, how did you as a DJ, you know, how did you get to a place where you were so compelling? You had such a defined style that, you know, I mean, I think there were like 20,000 people at the show that night, right? That all these people come out and like you're able to sustain this for, you know, 2 hours while you're DJing with LL Cool J. And he said, you know, it's funny. He said, I grew up in a situation where my parents got divorced and my dad moved to New York and my mom was in Phoenix. And so I was kind of living between the two worlds, and all my friends in Phoenix, like they all listened to rock, you know, rock music. And all my friends in Brooklyn, you know, they all listened to hip hop. It was kind of the early days of the kind of hip hop thing. And so when I would go to Phoenix, I would want to introduce my Phoenix friends to all the hip hop. And when I would go to, you know, to Brooklyn, I want to introduce my hip hop friends to all the rock stuff. And he said, when I started DJing, that kind of became my thing. I started like mixing rock and hip hop and all this stuff. And he said, and then Rick Rubin came along and like the Beastie Boys and Run DMC and all this stuff that was going on. And he said, all of a sudden it was like, ba-da, there's my kind of beacon. There's my signal. I'm going to fly toward that light, you know? And that sort of became the genesis of what was the mashup movement, which he's kind of been a significant player in for the last, you know, couple of decades. But what was really cool is he said, when you are developing as an artist, he said, everybody starts off with their roots. And for him, his roots were, you know, hip hop and rock, and then the inspiration of Rick Rubin and some of these other guys. And he said, you know, you start with your roots and then you start climbing the trunk. You stay really close to the trunk, really close to your influences. But he said, at some point, you have to branch out. You have to step out on the branch. You have to veer off of the trunk and you have to begin finding your own path and creating your own style. And he's like, the goal for me has always been to go so far out on the branch that I'm in the company of one. I'm so far out that nobody's going to follow me because they're afraid they're going to fall. And he said, the funny thing is, the farther out from the branch I got, the more bold decisions I made with my work, the more loyal my fan base become. And honestly, the more successful I became. And I thought I was being really snarky. You know, I thought I would have this like really cool little comeback for him. I said, yeah, but you know, what happens when you go so far out on the branch that the branch breaks and you fall to the ground? He said, oh, but that's the beautiful thing. He said, when the branch falls to the ground, that's when the new trunk is born. And then all of a sudden people are imitating you. And I was like, whoa, that's a pretty great comeback. I could tell he'd thought about that before, right? But I think that's what we have to do as creatives, as entrepreneurs, as people who want to build a substantive body of work. At some point, we have to veer away from the trunk, get away from our safety zone, get away from our influences. We have to step boldly out onto a branch to the point where we become a company of one. Why don't people do that? Because it's safer in close to the trunk. It's safer when you're emulating other people that you know are already successful. It's safer to be slightly deviant from the norm, but not all the way out on the end of the branch where you could fall off. And then, you know, of course, there's always the question, what if I choose the wrong branch? What if I make the wrong decision with my work? You know, and so people would rather stay close to the trunk. But the reality is you could spend your entire life hovering close to the trunk, hugging the trunk, climbing the trunk, and never veer off. And if that happens, then you're never going to know what kind of body of work you could have built if you had had the courage to make a bold decision with your work.
Yeah, the fruit doesn't grow close to the trunk, right?
That's exactly right.
Now, one of the things I want to ask you, because that was awesome, but I want to, like, when have you, like, what struggles have you had when trying to get to your authentic voice? Because, I mean, this space that you dwell in is not without it's already crowded environment. You know what I mean? Like, there are a lot of people that write about this stuff. We were talking about that a little bit before. Like, there's always going to be elements of that. So how do you kind of look at what you create and figure out how to make it unique? Because that's one of the things you talk about, is, you know, like the uniqueness factor. Like, how do you take time to do that? Because a lot of people, like you said, they're close to the trunk. You know, it's easier to be told what to do than to decide what to do. That's why decisions are, I mean, it's way easier for, that's why people check email first thing in the morning, right? Like, what can someone else tell me to do today rather than me make that decision on my own either the night before or first thing in the morning or whatever. So right. how do you take that time to kind of say, all right, I have this, I know I have something to offer that's very distinct and it's purely mine. It's authentic. I know this. How do I take the time to identify that and spend time on it? Like what would you recommend?
Well, it has to begin with what you care about, right? You have to be invested in your work. And that's really, when I talk about authentic voice, I think many people think I'm just talking about open the kimono and just show everything. And, you know, if people like it, they do. If they don't, they don't. You know, it's all about transparency. And that's not really what I mean by authenticity. What I mean by authenticity is genuine investment in your work, to the point that people see you have skin in the game. People see that you're not just playing, that you actually care about not just the work, but about the results. And so you have to begin by asking yourself, what is it I really stand for? What do I really care about? Not what game am I playing, not how can I manipulate the system to get a little more attention, because attention is not equivalent to impact, right? But what do I really care about? What results do I really want to see in the end for the people that I'm trying to serve? And I mean, there are a couple of ways that you can do that, but the best way to ensure that your work is infused with authenticity and that people see that you're invested in your work is to root it in something you really care about and not just fabricate it. So a couple of questions you can begin to ask in order to do this. I mean, the first one is what stirs your compassionate anger, right? What is it that fills you with, now, I don't mean being slighted. I don't mean being offended in some way. I mean, what is it that stirs compassionate anger, compassion, which means to suffer with, right? What stirs that in you? And then ask, okay, are there any patterns I can identify there that I can found some work upon? Because that's going to be great fuel for your best work over the course of time, right? You know, another question you can ask is, what moves you emotionally? You know, what is it that causes you to well up with emotion? I'm moved by the stories of underdogs. We may have talked about this last time I was on your podcast, right? I love the stories of underdogs, and I watch movies and I read books and all of that fuel that fire. And I get to work with a lot of underdogs. And all of my books, by the way, have been written to underdogs, people who are trying to overcome tremendous odds in their work. And so that fuels my work in profound and unique ways, because that's something, that's a unique theme that flows through my work over the course of time. You know, what problems are you obsessed with solving that you just can't seem to let go of, right? Again, this could be unique to you. It could be something that other people may not find reflected in their body of work, but it is reflected in yours because it's something that you deeply care about or are deeply obsessed with. So you can begin to do a little bit of self-reflection, but for many people, it ends there. It's just they sit around thinking about, what do I care about? But they never look for the patterns and try to identify, how can I apply some of these things I've learned about myself to the work I'm doing so that I'm infusing myself into the tasks I'm already doing? Or worse, Mike, and I know you've seen this, I've seen this a lot in my work, because I spend most of my time working in organizations, you know, working with companies, helping them figure some of this stuff out. Worse, people just say, well, I'm going to keep hopping from job to job to job until I find a job that perfectly lines up with what I like to do all day. Instead of saying, hey, I am going to figure out what I'm great at. I'm going to figure out what I care about, what moves me. And then I'm going to try to find a way to infuse those themes into the work already in front of me until I can navigate to something that is more consistent with the kind of work I think I could knock out of the park every time. But you don't start by looking for that work. Instead, you start by adding value anywhere you can, being resourceful, trying to pour yourself into what you're doing. And then you navigate slowly to those places where you can add unique value.
It's interesting you talk about that idea of job hopping from job to job rather than infusing it. I mean, Cal Newport's talked about this. John Acuff. Right. Like, I mean, but everyone, like you said, everyone talks about it in a different way. Like how you and I talk about that versus how Cal does versus how John does. That the way we talk about it, the way we kind of impart, you know, our work, resonates differently with everybody. I mean, because we can all have the same, you know, audience, quote unquote, but the way we convey it is going to resonate completely differently, even with the same person, right?
No, I agree completely. And again, that's part of the authentic voice thing, right? Some people are going to resonate with Mike more when you talk about things. Some people are going to resonate with John. Some people are going to recognize or resonate with Cal. And some people are going to resonate with me, right? Just depending on the group, your experience, whatever. We all have different backgrounds, different experiences, different confluence of skills, passions, and experiences.
Even just on one particular point. Do you know what I mean? Like it could get right, that exactly. minute, right?
That's exactly right, you know? And so that's why, again, and I think all of us have done a tremendous amount of work trying to hone and refine our voice, you know, and figure out the best way for us to communicate. And that only happens over time, by the way. It's not something that's fabricated. It's something that's developed over the course of time. And each of us have put in a tremendous amount of work trying to figure out what is that perspective that I bring that's going to resonate with a certain group of people. Now, there are probably a lot of people who normally love what you have to say who would absolutely despise what I have to say, right? Or wouldn't receive it the same way. And that's okay. That's perfectly fine because, you know, not everybody's going to like what you do. Not everybody's going to receive what you do. But it's important that you stay consistent, that you stay true, that you remain precise and consonant. In the end, the most gratifying choice, of course, is to stay true to yourself, make bold decisions, and commit to a path that's reflective of your authentic voice, not a fabricated voice that's simply created to gain a little bit of short-term attention.
One of the things I want to talk about, you kind of alluded to this earlier, is the timing factor. Is, I mean, clearly, right. And we just, you just talked about the Jimi Hendrix story, which if you have the Patreon edition, you heard. If you didn't, then you didn't hear that story. It's a fantastic story. But timing, like, you know, I mean, how you mentioned that it's important not only to, you know, to recognize, you know, not only what you're putting out to the world, but how to coordinate your work with the ideas that have kind of already achieved some cultural momentum. So how would you help someone do that? Like in a quick, we don't have much time left, but like, yeah. What's one thing that someone can do to kind of start to recognize, okay, this is the right time to start to dive into this, or this isn't the right time to make a course correction or what have you.
So just one really simple thing, since we don't have a lot of time, I would encourage people, make sure that you're staying connected to other people who are either in your industry or who have your best interest at heart. And that you're looking out for one another and you're paying attention to the themes together. You know, I have groups that I get with on a consistent basis, and we talk about patterns in culture. We talk about themes in culture. We talk about what's going on, what's resonating, what's not resonating. Not because we want to go out and fabricate something that's going to take advantage of a trend. I think trend chasing is always a really, really bad strategy, because I think you're always, you know, you can chase the waves, you're going to end up on the beach, right? You're not going to stay in the water. I think that, however, I do think that you can take advantage of cultural themes and you can weave them into your work in such a way that they will provide an entry point for people to connect with what you're doing in a more meaningful way, you know, because it's not just what you care about and it's not even just what your audience cares about. It's also about ideas that are already out there that are gaining cultural momentum. And when you build something at the confluence of those three forces, it can be really powerful.
All right, final question. What's the final record that the Bengals have this year?
I'm going to go with 11-5.
That's what I said too. I told. Yeah. I think 11-5. I think a lot of people, barring injury. I think injury, because last year was a gong show for injuries.
Oh, absolutely, no question. It's really kind of amazing they did as well as they did, you know, considering the injuries they had last year.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, I would say 11-5, and I think that there are going to be a couple of surprise wins. I think there are going to be a couple of surprise losses, but I think in the end it's going to be 11-5. I think they're going to win the division, and I think that they're going to win at least one playoff game this year.
I've got them going to the championship game, but I don't think they make it to the Super Bowl. I think they I think they win two playoff games, maybe only one, because maybe they only need to win one if they win the division. If they finish 11-5, they should only need to win one playoff game to get to the championships.
True.
Theoretically.
True. But
that's what I said 11-5 when I was talking to Nick from Inside the Jungle. He asked me, and I said, I think 11-5. They think I'm being optimistic. I don't know. We're Bengals fans. I mean, we should be more hesitant, but what the heck? Let's go for broke.
I think those guys are from Cincinnati.
They're all from either Cincinnati or near. There's one of them's from northern, like closer to Cleveland, but is not a Browns fan at all. He's a Bengals fan.
Yeah, smart guy.
Todd, where can people find you, and where can they pick up your book? Because it's. I mean, from what I've gone through already, and I mean, it's not a. The thing is. The one thing I love about you, right? It's not a tough read. It's not a, you know what I mean? Like some of these books, you feel like either that it's taking too long to get to what you really need to hear, or it's just, it's too uncomfortable. This is right. a comfortable, you write in a very comfortable style that connects very easily. And I think anybody who wants to pick up any of your books, but start with Louder Than Words, because I think this is a really good, I really like it. And I think a lot more people need to harness their authentic voice rather than just, you know, talk and not listen to what's going on inside their heads and inside their hearts.
Great. Thank you. And thanks for your compliment, because, you know, if I were a guy talking about harnessing the power of your authentic voice and I couldn't write with an authentic voice, I think that would be a problem. So, thank you.
So people can find you where?
ToddHenry.com is the best place to find me. And then you can get to my book anywhere books are sold. The podcast is called The Accidental Creative. It's also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Awesome. Thanks again for joining me, Todd. And hooday.
Hooday, Mike.
Big thanks to Todd Henry for joining me on the show this week. It's always a treat to get to talk to him. And yes, he is very prolific. A book every 2 years has been, you know, it's phenomenal, a phenomenal work ethic. I would like to get to that point as well. Unfortunately, I would have to write, you never know. I could have another decent sized book out between now and the end of the year. Who knows? Maybe a bit of a spoiler alert. Even if you're not in the Patreon community, you're getting a bit of one right now. If you want to be part of the Patreon community and get bonus episodes of this podcast every week, two of them in that 10-minute range, and they're more personal and a little bit more topic-oriented as opposed to, say, subject-oriented in terms of interviewing someone, you can head over to patreon.com/productivityist. Check out all the perks, including the new $25 perk that gets you a productivityist pack shipped to you every 4 months in January and September and in May. You can check that out by going over to patreon.com/productivityist. And I'd love to see you supporting us. So there's a very active community. I've got a number of people that are backing me, and I'd love to count you as one of them. Next week, got another great show lined up. A really, really cool guest who I've chatted with before as well. I'm not going to tell you who it is. I hope you will join me again, but it's another really in-depth conversation. And until then, I wanted to thank you very much for joining me. And stop guessing in the meantime. Start going in the meantime and in between time. And keep moving things forward, okay? We'll talk to you next week.